Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, December 29th, 2015. And with me today, I have our Jedi Master in residence, John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I'm fine. I'm using my lightsaber to keep myself warm. Ouch! Because it's 16 degrees out there.
Yeah. Be careful because those lightsaber blades, they will cut. They will hurt. Just be glad you weren't with me in Steamboat over the weekend. It was cold enough that Hoth seemed like a tropical resort in comparison.
Yeah, those wind chill factors when you're breezing down the slope can really get you.
Oh, boy, howdy. Yeah. So, anyhow, the reason I wanted you here today first is because you've seen Star Wars.
It was awesome. It was amazing.
I'm glad you liked it.
One of the things I liked about it was is that there wasn't any silliness that kept focused on what they were supposed to be doing. There were no Jawas. There was no Yoda, no slavish devotion to anything in the past, except the clarity and the tradition of Star Wars episodes 4, 5, and 6. References to that for people who were new to the series, and yet some continued fresh stuff with Rey and Finn. Yeah, so it was a complete excellent movie.
I loved it. I loved that they managed to keep it a character-driven show instead of turning it into a special effects extravaganza, although there are a lot of effects. But it was still about the people. So I loved it.
It was excellent. But one of the things that was cool in the effects I noticed, and it's something that probably couldn't have been done in the past, was at the end of the movie when Ren and Rey were in a lightsaber fight, you could see the light from the lightsabers reflecting off the ground, and the ground glowed red underneath Ren's lightsaber, and it was just an awesome special effect. I'm not sure how many people noticed that, but it was just a beautiful touch.
Oh, I noticed. Yeah, it was awesome. Okay, hey, the other reason I wanted you here is because I've always had a great respect for your perspective on Apple as a company and the way they do things and why they do things. And you just bring a special clarity, I think, to what happens at Apple.
Oh, shucks.
No, really. It's true. I mean, you're just really awesome with this.
I know. I'm brilliant.
Yes, you are. You are brilliant. And so since we're coming up on the end of the year, and we only have a couple days left for TDO episodes before the new year, this just seemed like the perfect time to have you on to talk about what you would like to see from Apple in 2016.
Well, you know, when we talk about what we'd like to see from Apple in the coming year, it's all too easy to fall into incremental advances. You know, you want to see a faster iMac. You want to see, you know, a slimmer Apple Watch. But I'm thinking differently about this. Apple's been very successful, and they have great wealth. And when you have great wealth and great success, you also have a responsibility to use that power wisely. You know, Tim Cook has been influential in personal rights. He's been influential in protecting the environment. So I would like to see Apple take the next step and exercise, thanks to its wealth and success, exercise some leadership in advancing the state of the art in some key areas. And I have a list.
Of course you do.
Of course, I always have a list. So one of the things that comes to mind is advancing the tablet state of the art. You know, when that tablet first came out, it was the iPad in 2010. It was a rather slow device, and so iOS was limited by the hardware. We've seen charts from Phil Schiller about how the CPU and the GPU now are hundreds of times faster in the A9 and the A9X system on a chip SoC that compared to the original iPad. And so that placed severe limitations on what you could do with the iPad in 2010. And over the years, when everybody had an iPad that wanted one, we kind of got the feeling like even though the hardware had advanced terrifically, the operating system hadn't grown up enough. And so we kind of felt like, well, what we had was a supersized iPhone. And for many people, an iPhone 6 Plus or an iPhone 6S Plus is big enough. And so that created some problems, some cannibalization. And my feeling expressed previously in 2015, and some others have backed me up on this, is that iOS 9 needs to grow up a little bit more now and exploit the hardware. And there are several ways to do that. We've seen the picture-in-picture and the slide over and the split screen. That's an indication that Apple's thinking right about the situation. I saw an article that Brian posted the other day about a cool idea for a Windows manager. With increased power comes increased capability for content creation and management. And so a window manager would be kind of cool on a 12.9-inch screen. I'd like to see more capability in terms of the programmability of the iPad itself. Not necessarily building iOS apps, but taking some steps towards introducing better language support. I'd also like to see, in 2016, I'd like to see Apple solve the problem of the Apple Pencil. I haven't seen a lot of heartburn about this. There's been a little. But I think it's a big deal. I think Apple's made a tremendous manufacturing supply chain error here. I don't know what the cause is. It'd be interesting to find out finally what happened. You know, one imagines that a container on a cargo ship with 750,000 Apple Pencils sunk in a typhoon somewhere that we didn't know about, or some other terrible snafu happened. But I've had my iPad Pro since roughly the second week of November, and here it is the 29th of December, and I still can't go into the Apple store and buy an Apple Pencil. Ouch. And when I do, they say, well, the best thing for you to do, John, is to order it online. So I go and take a peek online, and I look at the delivery time, and it says 4 to 5 weeks delivery. And I just know that after I click the button and order my Apple Pencil for a five-week delivery, the next week they're going to be in the Apple stores, and the supply problem is going to be all over, and I'll be able to buy as many as I want. So, you know, it's kind of puts you in an odd situation. There have been those who have been lucky enough to accidentally be in the right place at the right time in the right Apple store, like
that's,
you.
That's like you. What happened to me. Yep. I, on a whim, went into the Flatiron Crossing Apple store, and they had one just sitting out on a shelf. You'd think it would be behind glass with armed guards, right, considering how difficult they are to get. But yeah, I just walked in, and it was there. So I got lucky.
Had your name on it. And, you know, a friend of mine ordered his Apple Pencil with his iPad Pro when it first became available for order, and it came a few weeks later, but he has it. And he was visiting me over the holidays with his wife, and he was sitting there with his iPad Pro tapping away with his pencil, and I was cringing, and I'm going, John, how come he has an Apple Pencil and you don't? This is a terrible situation, and it needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
So,
okay, on the Apple Pencil, I have something that I would love to see Apple do in 2016. You know, the tip is removable. I would like to see Apple come up with alternate tips that we can put on our Apple Pencil so we can do different things. You know, maybe give us like a wide tip, sort of like a chisel tip sort of thing, whatever else they come up with. But I like the idea of having a single stylus where I can just very quickly replace those tips, and then it works in a different way for me. I think that would be really great for artists.
What about different textures? Didn't you tell me once? I don't remember for sure, but it feels more like a pencil on paper than it does like metal on glass.
It does. I mean, you can still tell that you're using a stylus on glass, but it feels much closer to actually using a pen and paper than anything else I've seen that has the firmer stylus tip.
Might be some room there for some texture changes
to
suit people. Yeah. Well, next on my list, you ready?
Okay, I am ready.
I would like to see a update of the Mac Pro, the beautiful black silk.
Oh, yes.
That was introduced at WWDC in June of 2013, and it wasn't shipping in quantity until December of 13, and we haven't heard a peep from Apple since. And there's been much wailing and gnashing of teeth about Apple not updating that machine, because it feels like it was a flash in the pan product that Apple lost interest. You know, when it first came out, Phil Schiller said, we can, and I will edit it, but he said, you know, who thinks we can't innovate? And then expletive deleted. So there was a lot of...
the fact that you went to the all that effort to make sure you didn't say anything that had to be edited out.
Oh, sure.
Considering you're the guy that I always have to edit.
My track record. Yes, yeah. Yes. So there was a lot of fanfare, and it's an awesome, beautiful, fast computer. And it sends a signal. Every Apple product sends a signal or a sign. It says, this is what we're interested in. This is our vision. This is the community we want to support. And so for Apple to come out with the new Mac Pro after years and years and years of waiting for a new Mac Pro and then not say anything about it for 2.5 years makes us all wonder what Apple's up to, whether they've lost interest, whether they think they didn't sell enough to pursue it any further, that that's the end of the Mac Pro line, that Apple's getting out of the professional community. So, you know, we're in the dark and we worry, we fret. And I think it's time for Apple to fish or cut bait and come out with a new Mac Pro that solves a few of the problems that, that the first version had in constraints on the buses and expandability, and come out with the second generation with faster Xeon processors and say, you know, we really love the professional community. It just took us a while to get them second generation just perfect and just fast and just the way we wanted it and make everybody happy. And then we'll all breathe a sigh of relief and go, oh, wow, that was a tense 2.5 years. We're so happy.
Yeah, still, that would be nice. It's a long time to go between updates for Pro Machine.
That would be nice. Ready for my next item?
Yes, I am.
With Apple's success in products and its wealth, in light of the recent fourth generation Apple TV and Apple's interest in TV and in media, I think it's time for Apple to take a leadership role in 4K UHD.
Interesting.
That would be nice because Apple's been a follower so far. You know, they came out with the fourth generation Apple TV with just 1080p, which is Apple's way of saying, we're not ready yet. We're going to let others lead the way. There's other things going on in the 4K industry, but we're just going to sit pat and we're just going to go with the great masses. And most everybody has 1080p, so we're going to go with 1080p. We're not going to break any new ground, even though it was 3 years since our last product. And that's kind of a following role. And we don't expect, I don't expect Apple, with its influence and its wealth and its hardware leadership, to ever sit back and take a second seat to anyone. And meanwhile, Roku and Amazon and others are beating their chest about 4K and making Apple look bad. It's shallow in some respects because not everybody can support 4K, and there's some complications with high dynamic range and streaming standards for HDR and some other details with handshaking and people who have audio-video receivers. So it's a little tricky. But what could be really nice is if Apple were to take a leadership role and say, we're going to be the leaders in 4K. We're going to set the standards. We're going to adopt Dolby Vision as the high dynamic range standard. We're going to focus on these particular things. We're going to be a leader and fan, have a lot of fanfare about 4K, and our next device is going to be world's greatest device, and you're going to love it, and it's going to be expandable, and it's going to set standards and set new ground and also be updatable. And just sort of say, you know, we're a big media company. We sell hundreds of millions of dollars in media every year, more, and we sell hardware and we sell media, so everybody looks to Apple to do this kind of thing, and I think it would be cool for them to do that. Maybe 2015 wasn't quite the right year, but I hope 2016 is the right time for them to do that.
You know, I think that would be very cool. And now I'm curious. You remember how Apple stayed out of Blu-ray, and Steve Jobs called that whole product sector a bag of hurt? Do you think Apple is looking at 4K as a bag of hurt right now, and that's why they're staying out?
No, I don't think so, because it's a different hardware situation. The Blu-ray had some severe licensing issues that Apple didn't want to pay, and Apple was looking forward to the future, not backward to plastic. And while there is interest in ultra-high-definition Blu-ray, and it's helpful and useful to get content out there, and for the purists to have uncompressed, local, beautiful 4K video instead of streamed that's highly compressed, the future is still streaming 4K over the internet from all the sources that you love. And so it's not a comparable situation. It's digital streaming. It depends on what standards you're going to use and how you're going to deliver it. So it doesn't really have an exact analog to the plastic of old.
All right. So in this case, Apple could really pick the standards that they want and run with them, and then hopefully become the leader.
If they don't, somebody else will, and then Apple will have to tag along, and then they'll shrug their shoulders and say, gee, we're not getting any traction, we're all bummed out, maybe we shouldn't be in this business. You know how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, what else is on your list?
Education. I've seen stories here and there that the Chromebook Pixel is making a lot of headway in education. These small Chromebooks sell for about $250. They're web-based only. They don't have the elegance and the sophistication of a classic notebook computer like a MacBook Air. But schools who are on limited budgets, and who knows a school who's, you know, just rolling in money, right? So when the schools are thinking about buying these computers for the students, they're looking at these Chromebooks for $250 and they're going, you know, we just can't really afford a $900 MacBook Air. We'd love to. We think it would be great education choice for the students. They'd learn a lot more. It has more capability, but we're just strapped for money. And Apple seems to be so focused on the iPhone that some of the areas are falling between the cracks. Whether the executive team is stretched too thin, I don't know. But there is some worry that Apple's losing its leadership role in education. And it's simply a money issue. And of course, the argument comes up, well, we only sell the best and our machines are great and they're a little more expensive. But I think there's something Apple could do. I think the MacBook Air would be a good candidate to become the entry point for education. You know, the MacBook that came out earlier this year is the flagship MacBook for high technology, USB-C, advanced battery morphology and structure for a small compact device. And the MacBook Pro is the computer that's the fastest possible notebook and has the hardware that supports professional use, especially with video editing. So the MacBook Air, which was apparently never going to go with a Retina display, looks like a perfect candidate to enjoy the economies of scale. It's been around for a long time now. But with the right selection of hardware, using Apple's tried and true manufacturing techniques, you could still produce a very high quality MacBook Air with an 11-inch screen for students for maybe $499.
That would
make the decision by schools much easier. Sometimes it's not a question of absolute price, it's a question of balance of capability versus price. And so that would offer schools who have a little bit more money to spend instead of the bare threads, nothing, the opportunity to stay with Apple and stem the tide. Because competitors are always looking for weaknesses in Apple that they can exploit. And of course, as I mentioned earlier in the show, Amazon and Roku are trying to exploit Apple's weakness in 4K, even though it's not tangible yet. And Google's trying to exploit Apple's weakness in expensive, high-class MacBooks that aren't affordable by many schools. So I think Apple needs to counter that. And I'm looking forward to Apple generating some leadership in 2016.
I like that. I like that. All right, I have one thing I want to add to your list. And yes, I know that it's not you, it's me, because I'm adding it. And you remember before the Apple Watch came out, I was talking about, or I was speculating about how I thought it would be really cool if Apple made a series of smart sensors. And and then you could put them in little special pockets on shirts and shorts and shoes that are designed to accept these sensors, and then they know what type of data to record and then send that back to your iPhone. And I would love to see Apple still do something like that, because I want to see Apple become a leader in the wearable space. I think the Apple Watch is a great start. And Apple is set up to really be able to set the path for the way forward with wearable technology.
And as a punctuation of that, what I'd like to see is Apple get to the point where the Apple Watch battery is strong enough that you can go for days and days before you have to charge it. And that yes. would mean that you'd be able to do sleep monitoring as well.
And use it for backcountry activities where you aren't going to have electricity for several days. I have to leave my Apple Watch at home if I'm going out on a hike or some trip where I won't have electricity for more than 24 hours, which just breaks my heart. I would love to take my Apple Watch along and let it do its thing.
Right. And there's still some headway to be made in biometrics monitoring. I know that Apple didn't get approval for some of the monitoring that they wanted to do in the initial Apple Watch. As far as I know, blood sugar still needs a sample, but there may be exotic technologies down the road that allow you to sample blood sugar without being invasive. I don't know. But I'd like to see further physiology monitoring in future generations of the Apple Watch. And what this all boils down to is not just, as we said at the beginning of the show, not just incremental improvements and then wringing your hands, but you know, serious visible leadership. And Apple knows how to do that by being involved with certain groups and the way they market their products and being visible in certain areas instead of just sitting back and saying, well, our products are so great, you should just go buy them, as opposed to, you know, taking a clear public leadership role in education and in professional life and in wearables and in education.
That would be cool.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, we're out of time.
Oh, no.
I know. So we're going to have to wrap up. John, it is so great to have you here. I just love your perspective on Apple, and that's exactly why I wanted you here today.
Well, you're very welcome. It was a pleasure, and this was a fun show.
It was fun. And listeners, it's great that you're here. Thank you for being here yet again. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.